You're listening to the Prepared Homestead Podcast, equipping you to build a self-sufficient homestead in uncertain times.
We're your hosts, Sean and Monica Mitzel, coming to you from Sovereign Sunrise Permafarm in the mountains of northern Idaho. We're glad you're with us. On today's podcast, we're going to kind of reflect on 2015 and then just start discussing some of our goals and plans and our hopes for 2016.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to do an assessment, and this is what we recommend everybody do. Take a look at the past year. I know everybody says this, but hardly anybody does it. And I know everybody talks about setting New Year's resolutions, but nobody actually follows through on it, or very few. And there's all kinds of statistics out there that within the first month, less than half of resolutions are still even in effect.
Yeah. Well, I think that one of the things with resolutions is that people, they kind of think of them as it's what we do. It's a tradition for New Year's Eve, rather than really sit down and think about what are our real goals for 2016 and what are we committed to, not just, oh, what would be a nice idea or what is a dream.
Sure. And, you know, if you've listened to this podcast for any length of time, you know that we're very much goal-oriented, and that's really one of the main things that we're trying to help people do. And that is, whether you're homesteading or anything else, you have to have goals and objectives in order to achieve greatness or to get a lot of stuff done. Okay, so if you want to get stuff done, you have to have goals and objectives. So we're not resolution people, but we're goal-oriented. So it's a great time to not only reflect on the previous year, but to look forward to 2016.
Yeah, and what's great about looking back is that not only can you see everything that you've accomplished, and it sort of motivates you, like, wow, I actually did more than I thought.
Right.
I accomplished most of my goals, or I accomplished a lot. And then it also helps you look at, well, what did I not accomplish, or what did I not get done, and why? And then maybe try to figure out a way to overcome those reasons why you had excuses or whatever and push through in 2016.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can look back, look at the challenges that you had, and then look and see, how did you overcome them? And a lot of times then what you can do is you engineer in the future how to prevent those types of challenges from occurring.
Yeah, and sometimes challenges, we're not very good at dealing with the challenges. And so we can also look at, well, did I deal with that well? What did I do well? What did I do bad? And how can I change? How can I learn from that experience? Because there's never a bad experience as long as you've learned something and you're growing personally through those challenges and experiences.
Right. And, you know, like, I don't care if you're talking about the military or sports teams or being a homesteader. If you're not reflecting on what you've done, what you did wrong, and how you can implement changes to make sure that those things don't happen or overcome them, then you're not growing.
Right.
And we want to do that. We have some really exciting things that are going to be occurring in 2016.
Yeah.
And in order to accomplish everything that we want to accomplish in 2016, we've got to take massive action.
Yes, and we have to make sure we have a workable plan.
Yes.
And that starts with simply writing down goals, figuring out what it is we want to do, and then, you know, making a plan to complete those things.
Right. Absolutely. So let's...
Organization.
Let's take a look. Why don't we talk about some of the things that we accomplished this year? And again, this is a great exercise, not only for us to do or to kind of walk you through, but for you to do in your own life, just for the kind of the reasons you stated. It's motivating.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we just get focused on, oh, this is what we didn't do.
Yeah.
I wanted to finish this degree or build that, you know, outbuilding or implement these strategies, get so many, you know, so many trees in the ground, and I didn't get it done.
Right.
But a lot of times if you actually list out what you did do, you might go, oh, okay. Now, that's not to make excuses or...
Right.
Rationalize mediocrity.
Mm-hmm.
But it is to say, you know what, I did do a lot.
Yeah, because sometimes I think that we forget that though we have left some things undone, and we always say to ourselves, we could have done more. We could have done more yesterday. Always. We could have done more last week, last month, last year, whatever. We always could do more. But it is nice to see, and as we were going through this list and writing things down, I was like, wow, we really did accomplish a lot in 2015, and that's exciting.
Absolutely. So let's talk about that. All right, we're going to give you our accomplishments for 2015. And first of all, I want to say, and this is not a point of bragging. It's really not. But it is a testament to of being really focused.
Yeah, focused and having plans. And then, you know, family working together. Because we couldn't have done this, just you and I.
Oh, no
accomplished
way.
Everything we did. We had, you know, our children who were active participants and were huge helps in everything that we did in the homestead last year.
There's no way we could have done what we did.
If
it was just you and I. Yeah.
Our
family together really pulled together, and we actually got through what we're calling our establishment phase.
Yeah.
In our homestead. This is huge. Establishment is really difficult, and I'm gonna be honest here. What we did in this last year is probably equivalent to what most people do in 5 years.
Yeah.
That's just the truth.
And you know what's exciting is that it's not only us that can do this, because it's not like we come from, you know, backgrounds of farmers and we've always homesteaded or anything. If we can do this,
yeah,
you can do it too. And, you know, that's part of what we want to do, is help people accomplish very quickly what their plans and goals are.
Right.
Not that you're going to be done after the first year, because we're not. Oh, yeah, we still have plans and goals.
We're now in the building phase.
Right.
So we've done with the establishment phase. We're now in the building phase.
Yeah. And there's always going to be projects every year.
Sure.
And we're always going to want to expand. But the exciting thing is you don't have to go, well, it's going to take me 10 years to do that. It doesn't have to.
No. The conventional wisdom, which would usually, whenever you hear the word conventional wisdom, you want to throw it out the window.
Yeah.
The conventional wisdom is start slow and, you know, take your time.
Yeah, you'll overwhelm yourself.
Right. Don't burn out.
Yeah.
That is dead wrong. And I don't care whatever endeavor you're talking about, that is dead wrong.
Yeah, because, I mean, everywhere we've ever talked to people who are successful or read books by people who are successful.
Start slow.
Yeah, they're like, jump in, you know. And that's what you do, even homesteading.
Take massive action.
Yes.
That's right. Okay, so let's start. So again, we're now through the establishment phase. Now, what was the establishment phase? We're going to give you some of those highlights right now. So during establishment, we've planted here on our homestead over 200 trees, bushes, and support species.
Yeah.
At least. Now, not every single one of those trees and bushes that we planted lived.
Right.
Okay. But, I mean, I would say that we've got 200 in the ground, at least, that did live.
Right.
I mean, we have many that didn't.
Right. And the thing is with this is that then this is going to be a replacement here, a replacement there, not the huge plantings that we did this last spring and last
Absolutely.
Fall.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yes, we'll be
Tweaking.
We'll be filling out areas here and there. We'll certainly be doing a lot of herbal plantings.
Yeah, like understory type plantings.
Yes, but it's a lot of our mainframe design stuff is in.
It's done.
In. So that's really exciting. We managed in our first year to do multiple consulting jobs with clients.
Yeah.
And I can just think. I can think of one in particular where massive action was taken.
Yes.
And he accomplished so much.
He got so much done on his homestead in a very short period of time.
Short period of time. It was impressive.
Yes.
Very impressive.
You know, and that's the kind of thing where we get excited, because we work with a client. We show them the plan and give them the tools and I think in some ways the confidence to go, okay, I can do this. And they take it and they run with it.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. And it was really neat.
Good
job, Tony. Going up to his homestead and seeing everything that he's done is really exciting.
Mm-hmm. We held a total of 9 workshops out here on our farm.
Yep.
And that was pretty exciting. And I mean, our goal was actually to do 3 kind of tester workshops, but we just went for it.
We did. And, you know, it was really awesome seeing the response from the people coming. And I think Just them being able to get hands-on experience and be able to see the work that we're doing, even though it's in the beginning phases and things aren't grown out and everything.
Right. Our food forest doesn't much look like a forest, and it's not producing a lot of food.
Yeah.
But all those plantings are in the ground, and in just 2 or 3 years, it's going to be incredible.
Well, and it gave them something to go, okay, you know, I can do this. And that's really what we're trying to do, is equip you to say, oh, I can do it too. Because you can.
Right. Now, this is what we wrote here. We deliberately and intentionally got involved with our local and greater community.
Yes.
This is really important. This is a really important aspect if you want to have a resilient homestead or just a resilient family life. You have to have community.
Yeah.
Okay. And I don't mean like, you know, all the different programs of the government around you. I'm talking about your neighbors, your friends, your family, your community.
Yeah.
So what are some examples of deliberately and intentionally getting involved with our local and greater community?
Well, I think meeting neighbors and having, you know, a get together at our house where we deliberately got to know the people that were right near us. So if there was an emergency or communications issues or anything, we could still keep in contact with those people around us and created friendships there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they've been able to help us several times. Even just the people up here on the mountain have come and without even our prompting came and plowed our driveway.
Yep.
They were here. People were available when the fire started and we weren't around. Our kids were able to go to neighbors' houses.
Yep. And in the same light, we've helped other people around
us. Yes.
And so those interactions make everyone stronger and more resilient. And so but it takes deliberate and intentional work to do that. And I don't mean just like, okay, I'm going to go meet my neighbors and give them cookies, therefore I get stuff. I mean, you're developing relationships in the local community to build it with the intention of building it and talking to people.
Yeah.
We did certain things we tried to do but weren't successful, and hopefully we will be in the future, is we went to certain people and said, hey, and because maybe it's because this was just a little too much for us, you know, in our culture, too quickly.
Mm.
And that is things like, hey, let's go in on this piece of equipment and share it. Okay, and that's not some weird thing. That's a voluntary interaction of saying, let's buy this piece of machinery and use it for both of our homesteads in order to reduce the financial burden upon any one individual homestead.
Right.
Now, we didn't buy any equipment together with anyone, but we did a lot of trading and bartering.
Yes.
So that was a lot more palatable, and so that grew, and that's the kind of thing that really strengthens community.
Yeah. And then when we talk about community too, when we talk about the greater community, you know, we made a lot of wonderful contacts with people who are like-minded. Some of them have moved on to homesteads in different areas and others haven't yet, but they're keeping contact with us because that's their plan. That's what they want to do. And so, you know, building, whether it's online or whether it's through email or whatever, a greater community of like-minded people that are encouraging and supporting each other, even in just, you know, your plans or your hopes for what you're doing. I know a lot of Facebook groups that we're part of, we can ask a question and we get a lot of interaction with
people. Absolutely. And you can have that. I don't think, you know, the Facebook groups and stuff are great, but they can't replace your local community.
No.
Now, we have some exciting plans to create an online community in 2016, which I think are really exciting and can have a lot of benefit. Lot of benefit, but we will always be recommending people build local community as well.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing is getting involved with with any kind of local food networks.
Yep, we're involved with the local food network.
We are. We're trying to just help promote local food purchasing and seasonal purchasing.
Right, and we're also part of it's called a Master Forest Stewards program. So that's a local, or it's basically an extension to the University of Idaho, where we get further training in forestry. And then there's some volunteer work.
Right. So we help educate other forest owners on, you know, maintaining their forest. We help educate children on, you know, basic forestry principles and things like that. You know, so not only are we getting the instruction, but then we're also turning around and teaching others.
Exactly. All right, we processed over 400 animals on this property. Now, I don't know if that's, I mean, that sounds kind of gruesome, but
That's almost one, that's more than one a day.
yeah,
Although
no.
we didn't do one a day.
Right. Obviously, we did not do that.
We did a lot in
But
one
we did a
day.
lot of processing. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, because we basically turned that into a business or a farmstead
Yeah,
enterprise.
just one other stream of income.
What we figured out, we did some kind of rough math and figured out some of the stuff that we were able to produce this year on the homestead, and we were able to produce 765 pounds of meat.
Yeah.
Okay, that's dressed out. That's not on the hoof. That's not live. That's, cleaned and dressed.
And that's
765 pounds.
right for our family, not counting the things that we sold or the animals that we processed for others.
Yes.
This is just 765 pounds of dressed meat that is providing meat for
Right,
our family.
and that was, if you think about that, that's pretty good. Now, our family, because of the amount of people in our that are in the home right now, we go through a lot more meat than that.
Yep.
But I would, if you broke that down into 6 month increments, the second half of 2015, we provided 100% of our
Right.
meat.
We
Okay,
have
so in the
no
first
store-bought
half
meat in there.
of 2015, we were dependent a lot more
Yes, on the
on the
store.
store and everything else. In the second half of 2016 or 15, we didn't buy any meat from the store other than a couple of small specialty items.
Right.
Okay, so that was a huge accomplishment. All right, egg production. We figured out that we produced 184 dozen
Dozen eggs.
eggs. That's 2,208 eggs on our property. We haven't bought store-bought eggs in a long time.
No.
Milk production. We produced and collected through Lindy's hand,
Yep,
pretty much,
Lindy collected.
and Emily.
And Emily did some of it.
125 gallons of milk. Now that's not a huge number for a raw dairy or anything like that, but for an individual homestead, that's great.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, like right now we're getting near the end of each one of our does milk period. They're going to start drying up and we'll have to do rebreeding and all of that. And the beginning of the year was the same thing. We only had one milker, but it was that those summer months and early in the fall that we were getting most of that milk that we talk about. So we were kind of, overflowing in milk for a while there.
Yeah, we were. It's great. And it was great. I mean, it was during
It was.
obviously the time when everything was flush, and then in
Yes.
summer and the early fall, that we were just we had ears and or I mean eggs and milk coming out of our ears.
Yeah.
We
Yes.
also have ears.
We have yours.
Okay, so we also had over 400 pounds of produce.
Yep. Now that included things like our squash and pumpkin and cucumber. We got a lot of good tomatoes, and because of our short growing season, some of our tomatoes were still green. Actually, quite a few. I pulled all the ripe ones, and then some other ones came in that just never got to ripen, but we pulled those before they froze and ended up making really good green tomato salsa.
Yeah, absolutely. It was delicious.
Yeah, I even did fried green tomatoes, so it's very
Very
southern
cool.
of me.
Very. But it's important to notice too that our emphasis was not on annuals.
Right. And it isn't, because one of the things that we're trying to do here is grow primarily perennials. We're
Yeah.
trying to grow, our trees and bushes and things that come back on an annual
Right,
basis.
right. And all we already said this, but we didn't get a huge fruit harvest.
All right. Not
We just
this year.
didn't because we have a lot of young trees in the ground. We did get some.
Well, yeah, we got a lot of raspberries.
We got.
I know we said originally about 40, but I think it's closer to 60 pounds of raspberries, because we ended up eating a ton of
It was
fresh
a lot of
raspberries,
raspberries, whatever
and
it
then I
was.
froze just
Yeah.
pounds and pounds and pounds of raspberries that we've been using over the last several months.
Yeah, and we got some fruit, we got some currants, and we got some apples, and like you said, a
Strawberries,
lot of
a lot of raspberries,
raspberries.
some
Yeah,
blackberries.
strawberries and blackberries. But in 2 years, in 3 years, I'm telling you, we're going to be getting hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, probably thousands of pounds. In fact, I know thousands of pounds of fruit.
Well, then I'm going to have to hire people to help me preserve.
Well, we're going to have, we'll be eating lots of fruit, obviously. We'll be preserving lots of fruit. We may even get into some type of farmstead enterprise. We might be making meads and ciders. I mean, who knows of the types of things that we'll be able to do.
Yeah. And of course, then we're also growing herbs, which many of the herbs that we have are perennial. And so the lemon balm came back in full force this year. It was amazing, and the chickens loved it. We grew lavender and several different kinds of mint, including chocolate mint, which, by the way, does taste like chocolate mint, and it's delicious, as well as several different types of basil, which were great in all of our sauces and things that we made over the summer.
Yeah, and so I would say that, hey, over 400 pounds was pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Now, I know we're shooting for more this next year, but again, even though we're shooting for more than 400 pounds of produce, still not our emphasis as far as annual production.
Well, yeah, because one of the things we wanted to increase this year, and which we're going to start sooner, and we're going to put them in the hothouse where the chickens are out there making nice and ready for us, is tomatoes. And we use a lot of tomatoes in our family, just with casseroles and sauces and soups and things. So being able to grow probably three times as many tomatoes as we did last year would be really great.
I'd see that definitely happen.
Yeah, because we've got that great greenhouse that the chickens are prepping right now.
That's right. Okay, so we made over 90 gallons of bone broth.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot. That sounds like a lot.
It does sound like a lot, and we go through a lot. It's amazing how much bone broth we use. And I honestly, anytime that a recipe calls for water, I use our chicken bone broth. And that bone broth is made from the heads, necks, and feet of all the chickens that we've raised or butchered here.
Yep.
And so this is basically stuff that most people would just throw away. And we're using it to make a highly nutritious and very delicious broth that now I can add to sauces and soups and stews. We even make our rice in it a lot of times. Sometimes I'll cook pasta in it if I'm not going to drain it.
Yeah. Another kind of big project was we added about 2 acres of pasture. Silvo pasture would be a more accurate term, because we didn't... Silvo pasture meaning where you integrate forest and pasture. And
right.
So what we mean in this case is that we didn't take out all the trees and make your traditional pasture. We left some trees in there. So we expanded that. So we added a couple acres of silvo pasture where we run animals through.
Well, and the pigs especially loved it.
Yes.
Especially the place where we left stumps and roots, and they were in there digging like crazy.
Yep.
And doing what they do.
That's right. And that was by design. It was also a lot of work. We did a lot of that by hand.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially Joseph.
Yes.
Joseph was out there cutting down a lot of those trees. You went out there and marked, hey, cut down this, and this.
Or essentially leave this, and this.
Right. Leave these things. Don't touch these.
Yeah.
And
So that was good. And we added a couple acres of pasture in total, or at least where animals can run.
Yeah, so we paddocked it, which was great.
Right. So in that, we put a lot of fencing in.
A lot of fencing.
So we added over a mile of fencing.
Yep. Not, is that including our food forest?
Yes.
Fence? Yeah.
Yes, over a mile. I don't know exactly.
Yeah, really, it was a lot of fencing.
It's a lot. So again, all those making paddocks, cross fencing, and making new pastures, setting that up. So that was a lot of work. We also dug a couple ponds.
Mm-hmm.
This
one
year.
Really big pond, and then one smaller pond,
right.
But it's still a pretty significant pond.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I say something about that?
Sure.
Because it's been really neat. When we first dug the pond, we basically got no rain after that.
Yeah.
So it was like this
sat there with a little bit
open
of
dirt.
Mud at the bottom.
Yeah, and then it eventually dried up.
Yeah.
I mean, we had nothing. And so it was like people would come over in July and look at it, and it's like, oh, yeah, that's our pond. And it's like this dirt hole. I don't even know. It looked ridiculous. And as it's actually started raining and the water was flowing down, and at one point we actually were getting massive overflow of water. But now we look out and we have the snow.
Through the spillway, yeah. The water overflow
yeah.
through the spillway.
Well, not only with the pond, but even just flooding our property. I mean, it was just mm-hmm. a lot of water over those couple of days. But it filled up the pond, and now we have the snow and the frozen, and it just looks really beautiful. And I think, okay, see, we have a real pond now. It's not the cement pond in the backyard.
Right, with a liner. Now, one lesson learned there. So one of the challenges I wrote down this year was digging the pond, which I think was a great a use of our time and resources. We actually rented an excavator and dug it out ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And did it and built the dam wall and set up the spillway and did the calculations. But, you know, not everything always goes to plan.
Right.
And in this case, the pond didn't go to plan. And what I mean by that is that, you know, I was just sure that I was going to be able to hit, you know, a good clay layer and we'd be able to compact it. And,
yeah, because we have some clay on our property.
Yeah. But it didn't quite work out that way. So that although the pond is right now it's holding water just fine because we have a seasonal stream feeding it. But it doesn't fully hold water. So we will eventually have to do some minor tweaks here and there, adding bentonite and doing some maybe a little bit of reinforcement on the dam wall and some minor tweaks.
Yeah.
But overall, very glad we did it. Good project. Just didn't quite go
100%.
100%.
Yeah, and you know, and again, the value of this is, first of all, we're learning a little bit more. But you learned, you know, using an excavator and being able to do a project on your own. A lot of people would have hired that out.
Oh, it would have been very expensive.
It would have been very expensive. And it was, you know, it felt like it was expensive renting the excavator. But the fact that you felt confident enough to just go, I'm just going for it. I'm going to do it. And it's pretty neat. I think as homesteaders, we have to have that attitude.
Yeah, and there are certain things that it's okay to farm out and hire out to other people.
Well, yeah, like our well pump.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be able to do that.
Right. It's a little too deep.
But there are certain things that you should try yourself, even if you're not confident or anything else. You got to go for it.
And even if you mess up, it's okay.
That's right.
You can always fix it.
Yeah, even if you mess up, you've got to keep taking shots.
Yep.
I mean, that's just one of the key things that we keep preaching over and over again. We also put in hundreds of yards of swales.
Yes.
Now, I'm telling you, I can already see the difference in our land.
Mm-hmm.
It is, I think we're going to see a significant difference this next spring and summer.
Mm-hmm.
But there was already a measurable difference, even though we just put them in this spring.
Yeah.
It's commonly known that in swales, the full benefit of swales takes about seven years.
Yeah.
Takes about 7 years.
But each year, you see a little bit more. And that improvement happening where you're able to grow a little bit more and your pasture and your land is a little bit more moist and is teeming with
growth.
Yeah, with and more.
It just improves the hydrology of the land. Those areas don't require as much irrigation. The pasture is healthier. all those benefits. And so that was, I think, one of the more rewarding projects because you see the tangible benefit.
Yeah.
Right away. In fact, before all the snow came, when it was finally started raining again, you could see them filling up with water.
Well, yeah, and that was a challenge too, is that there were some areas that the chickens had gone into and sort of messed with, and so we had to go out and during the rain and stuff try and dig it out and make sure that things were evening out.
So we're tweaking the swales and you know, because they didn't have full growth on them, there's not a bunch of roots.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, when we dug all that stuff, it was so dry this last summer, and I think we're going to see such huge improvement this next year because we are actually going to get moisture.
Right, and what we're literally trying to do is drought proof our farm. And in fact, it's supposed to be dry again this next year.
Right.
You know, that's what's predicted. And so what we're doing is little by little making our permafarm more resilient.
Yep. Well, yeah, we're making it so that we don't have to sit around using the water from our well, but our land is being watered by the fact that we're not letting all the water flow right off our property.
Right.
We're holding it in.
One of the other projects we did this year is we created a shooting range. Just a small range, but it's great to have something on your property where you can safely go out and shoot firearms and keep your skills up. And
and it's wide enough for
about five or six
people to be able to utilize
targets. So yeah, it's pretty, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a good little range, and obviously we're going to make more improvements and
yeah.
and do some, you know, covers out there and tables, and, you know, make it even more user friendly. But right now it's great to have that.
Sure. Yeah. We did, and we don't have time to go into each individual project, but we did 12 building projects.
Right. These weren't gigantic building projects. It's not like we were building giant barns or workshops or anything.
No, no. But woodsheds, chicken coops, mm-hmm. Chicken tractors, rabbit hutches.
The chicken heated greenhouse.
The chicken heated greenhouse, the mobile chicken coop, the solar shower,
yeah.
and dry composting toilet.
And, you know, for me, the best thing about these projects is not only, first of all, they look nice. I mean, I really do enjoy looking out. You made sure that the roofs were all green, which is what kind of our color was around here. But we used a lot of wood from our own property for all the posts throughout these projects, which is really great. It just kind of makes you feel a little bit less dependent on the Home Depot or
right.
other places where you go, ah, those are our posts. We took those out of the property, right. peeled them down, and we're using them. And that's really cool. But also, we didn't spend a lot of money building these.
No, we didn't.
And so these are things that anyone can do.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of our, I'll just give you a quick sneak peek into 2016, is we're looking to get some of these plans out there.
Yeah, get them into your hands so that you yeah. can actually use
and
them.
And we're talking about a $300 greenhouse. I mean, this is just unheard of. I mean, people are paying thousands of dollars yeah. for these. Even the kits that people are buying, the cheap kits, are for many hundreds of dollars.
Right. And we're trying to show you that all of these things can be done still on a budget, and you can save a little bit and then do a project and save a little bit and do a project. This isn't thousands and thousands of dollars of investment.
Right, right. When we say take massive action, when we say conventionalism, you throw that out the window and you can go really fast. We don't necessarily mean with lots of money. Now, of course, it helps.
It does help.
Lots of money.
But most of us don't have that.
Right. But there's still things you can do quickly and taking massive action.
Yeah. And a lot of those are going to require a lot of sweat. I mean, that's right. The thing. You have to be willing to work hard. And if you're committed and you're willing to work hard, you can get a lot done in 1 year.
Right. Yeah. We just finished 2 podcasts, and it was like 97 or 98. Podcast mm-hmm. 97, 98. Talked about basically making the homestead more financially resilient.
Yeah.
One of our big accomplishments was we created 11 different streams of income this last year.
Yeah, and some of them are better than others. Some of them...
Well, yeah, I mean, they weren't all, like, large streams of income. That's right. Not our point, is that there's 11 different streams of income.
Right.
Different little endeavors. Something as simple as selling eggs
mm-hmm.
To consulting on land.
Right. And, you know, and this goes back to the other podcast, which I recommend you listening to, but everyone has skills. Everyone has interests that they can turn around and help somebody else in those things and make a little cash in doing it. I mean, you can turn your skills and your interests into an enterprise.
That's right. Absolutely. Okay, we also made huge strides in homestead skills. I mean, no doubt about it.
Yes.
This was, I mean, and again, a lot of people will tell you that, you know, you need to have years and years of experience before you can call yourself proficient at any one thing. Mm. Just throw that out the window.
Yeah.
You gotta throw that kind of garbage out the window. It's usually the people who are in the industry trying to protect their own little
niche,
saying that, no, you have to be doing this for 20 years in order to have anything to say about it. That's not true.
It's not true. And, you know, the thing is... if you had talked to me a year and a half ago about cleaning chicken feet and heads, and by the way, scrubbing the dirt off a chicken foot nail isn't exactly the most glamorous job in the world. But if you had talked to me about that, I would have looked at you sort of like you were a crazy person. And here I am a little over a year later, and that seems like normal to me. I'm throwing a bucket of heads and feet into a sink of water with some vinegar in it, and I'm in there scrubbing and giving pedicures to these chickens.
Right.
and throwing them into a pot to make broth. Well, not even
thinking twice about it.
No, I don't even think... Right, it's not even... Sometimes when there's a lot of them in there, I go, whoa, this is really weird. Right. Imagine if someone saw this right now, they might kind of gross them out. But it's not, you know, it's not that I have all this experience, but I've done it now many, many, many times. I've read about the benefits of bone broth. And so now I turn around and go, hey, you can do this too. And let me teach you how to do it.
So it's not that we're not trying to convince people that we've been doing this for a long time. We're trying to convince people of it is that you can do it.
Yeah.
And if we can do it and you can do it in a short period of time, then you can do it in a short period of time.
Yeah.
And you can do it faster than what people are telling you.
Yes. And our whole thing is trying to equip you and trying to show you that you don't have to be raised in the country to be able to turn around and very quickly be able to learn these skills. And that's what we've done this last year, and we're trying to pass that on to everybody and encourage them. And we see that in our workshops, and they leave and they go, okay, I can go home and I can do this.
Right, and they'll write you and say, Thank you. I did it.
Yeah, and that's awesome, and that's really our goal, is to get people feeling confident about all these skills, even though we haven't been doing it very long. It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. I mean, in any endeavor, I think there's, you know, there's protectionism.
Yeah.
And it's usually by industry, and they say, nope, you can't jump into this. You need to have certification, you need to have degrees, you need to have all this experience. Most of the time, that's not to ensure safety and security, that's to protect.
Right. That's ensure security of their
right.
of their particular thing.
Whatever, right. It's kind of like big agri.
Mm.
You know, big agricultural, you know, industrial, multinational corporations lobbying politicians to impose crushing regulations on small farmers and all this kind of stuff in order to stamp out competition.
Right.
You know, they'll win a lot of times because politicians are like, they got a lot of money, so I'll put this into the Food Safety and Modernization Act and we'll make people chlorinate the water in order to rinse vegetables, you know, starting in 2015.
Which is ridiculous.
Which is true, by the way.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, we're not trying to say that experience is nothing, because
it's great.
It is great. It's really great. But, you know,
that shouldn't stop anyone.
It shouldn't stop anyone. And this last year, you know, as we've learned more and more, I just go, well, this isn't as hard as I thought it was. Why didn't anybody teach me this? Why didn't anyone show me this? And no one did. So it's like, why not step out and go, hey, guys, come here. Let me show you something. Because it's not as hard as you think it is.
Right.
You know, you can do it.
Yeah. And especially because, you know, we're not trying to replicate the 1800s here.
No.
Obviously, we're talking
We're not frontier homesteaders. Yeah, we're talking on a podcast. We like internet.
Yeah. And so we're kind of meshing skills, old school skills, modern technology.
Yeah, and entrepreneurship.
And entrepreneurship, and kind of bringing that together to make your homestead, you help you become more self-sufficient and self-reliant. And that doesn't mean, when I say self-sufficiency and self-reliance, what I don't mean is you holing up alone.
Right. You're not eschewing everyone else and just going, oh, I do everything
myself.
Right.
That's not what we're talking about. We talk about building community all the time. And it's almost like it's local self-sufficiency.
Yes.
Okay, so it's, we say self-sufficiency, and we do want you to be more self-sufficient, and we want you to have lots of skills, but you also have neighbors and community that you need to rely on, and you can't do everything yourself.
You can't, no.
And so what we mean by that, really, is kind of a local self-sufficiency.
Yes. And it's a blessing to help other people. It's a blessing to know that if someone is having a hard time, they feel able to come to you and say, hey, can you help me out with this? It really is. It's a great thing.
It's so awesome. I could sit here and probably give you 10 different instances where I was able to help someone else, or they were able to help us.
Yeah, in just the last even 6 months, probably, we could think of that. And it's really... I don't know. It's been a huge change from, it's not that there wasn't community in the Marine Corps, because there was, but it was different. It was a different type of community. And here, you know, people understand that if your vehicle goes out, you need a ride. You know, if your, for our example,
if our utility vehicle
goes out, and that's what we use to plow snow.
We need to plow.
We've got neighbors that are like, oh, do you need me to come plow? Or, hey, you want to borrow my plow?
Right.
It's like, that's really awesome. But in exchange, we bring them what they need or give them what they need.
Well, right now, we're abundant in meat. So we give them meat.
Yeah, because we have friends who aren't abundant in meat.
This is a great...
It's a great trade.
Relationship.
Yes. Yeah, and it benefits both. And that's always what we're looking for.
Win-win.
Yes, and it's not like we're saying, you know, only form friendships for what you can give them or what they can give you. There's a benefit in just having the relationship with people, because there's just some amazing people out there. But that relationship where you can both give and having meaningful contributions to each other's lives is pretty neat.
Absolutely.
And it's something we haven't experienced before.
Yeah. Well, hey, here, that brings up another accomplishment, and that's the fact that we're going to hit 100 podcasts.
Yeah.
In 2015. It's kind of funny because this is number 99.
And then, we'll be posting 100 tomorrow. We have to.
Yeah, that's right.
To hit 2015 for 100 podcasts.
I mean, you may think, well, that's not that very much. It's 100 podcasts. But in the podcasting world, it's a big deal.
Oh, yeah. What did they say? After like 7 podcasts or something, generally they die off. Is it 7? 13?
I think it's like more like 75% of podcasts don't get past number 7.
Yeah. It's something like that. It's like really high percentage of people start a podcast, but then never really continue their podcast.
Right. So
again, not a bragging point. Just saying we're pretty excited about it.
Yeah. No, we're excited. And what's really exciting about that is that more and more people are listening. At first, we were doing this, and it was like, chirp.
Yeah, no one's there. But this is a perfect example of why you continue to do what you're doing, regardless of the results at first. Well, because the results will eventually come if you stick to it.
And you have to stick to it.
Yes.
I don't remember exactly who said this, but someone said, essentially, that you have to stay in the game till you win the game, but you can only play
one game.
And essentially the point is that you have to stick with it.
Yeah.
You can't get discouraged because, you know, there was only a couple hundred downloads or whatever for that month. You have to keep going.
Right.
Even if hardly anyone's listening, you have to keep going.
Right.
And eventually.
Well, as there's the other one, you know, if you build it, they will come. Well, you have to build it. You have to build your... In our case, a podcast, and you just keep going and you keep putting the information out there and knowing that eventually people will hear and they will be learning and will be growing from your contribution that you're giving even on a podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is why it's so important to do a reflection on 2015. In anything you do, really. I mean, it's really important to assess and reflect what you were doing in order to learn from it.
Yeah, you can even do that on a daily basis in the evening, just sitting and kind of reflecting on your day. And what did I accomplish? What did I not get done? What are some things I did well? What are some things I didn't do so well? And how could I change those things for tomorrow?
Absolutely. Okay, I think we're gonna stop there. But our proverb for today comes from Proverbs chapter 14, verse 6. A scoffer seeks wisdom in vain, but knowledge is easy for a man of understanding.
Today's shout out goes to Cindy in Michigan. Thanks for listening.